This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackhouse Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. It's race week. I'm so happy to say that finally. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. Charlie Ante joins me. Got a busy show for you. It is the F4FR America's season preview. Just a full disclosure, we're trying to get as many drivers as we could, but obviously they were preparing for Road Atlanta, so going to be a little light on that content, but really, we're going to be heavy on a lot of other things. First off, Spencer Bucknum joins us. He is the rookie in F4, and yes, it is part. He is part of the Bucknum family, so we'll talk with him what that means to him, and moving up from the F4 West Championship into the F4 National Championship. Then Charlie and I will talk about the FR America's season opener, which will be joined with F4. And the newest commentator to the F4FR America's Championship is Jonathan Green. We'll talk about his history and how busy he's going to be this weekend. So as always, you can leave us a voicemail at 815-714-9260. Email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Any question you have anytime during the season, feel free to ask and we will feature on our program. Tweet us at Inside Open Wheel and follow us on Facebook as well. So before we get into the season preview, Charlie and I have some IndyCar news to talk about. We'll start off with the big one per se, and that is that Detroit will now have IMSA as a doubleheader because the 24 Hours of Le Mans has been pushed over to August, so that gives the drivers don't have to fly from Detroit all the way over to Le Mans for the mandatory test. So, Charlie, it's once again going to be a busy weekend in Detroit.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Anytime IMSA and IndyCar partner up, I think it makes for a good event. I think the only downside to that, from what I can tell, is that it doesn't seem like it leaves a whole lot of room for any of the Road to Indy series to join them.
Right.
I'm assuming that they're not going to be there at Detroit.
Let me pull up the race schedule because
I'm not sure if they were planning on being there anyway.
I think Indy Lights at least was supposed to be there. I need to pull up my open wheel calendar, the handy dandy spreadsheet I have. And it was just IndyCar and Indy Lights that were supposed to be there. I would imagine they were going to pair with SRO, but nonetheless, it always makes for a tight weekend because normally it's IndyCar. At the time, you know, they had World Challenge and Trans Am and IMSA. And I can't remember, have you been to Belle Isle before?
Once. I think I went in 2008.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember the last time I was there a couple years ago when I went with my wife. You had the IndyCar paddock on the pavement. The World Challenge paddock was strewn between there and turn 5. I think this is also when Trans Am started going there as well. So, I mean, it's here's the weird thing about Belle Isle. It's spacious enough, but at the same time, it's tight. Of course, you went there before they extended turn 3 all the way, you know, further down to where it is today. So the infield was a little bit shorter. But don't get me wrong. I love it. I think it's great. You know, it always makes for a fun weekend. By the way, we are also trying to work with my friends over at Sports Car Unleashed to do a collaboration. I think that'd be kind of cool to do that on the IMSA IndyCar weekends to kind of see what the other side's looking at, kind of see their big stories as we prepare for another race weekend. Other stories making news. There were earlier in the week, Dustin Long of NBC Sports wrote an article. Roger Penske likes the idea of a NASCAR street course race. Now, we all know that that's been, you know, talked about over the years, and Roger Penske would have some interest in that because this next generation of stock car is going to be like what the supercars are over in Australia. And we know that they put on a fine show over Down Under. It's actually, I've always said that the supercars are one of my favorite series. So, Charlie, I'm going to let you talk about this because you're the one who actually brought it up in our little group chat and our friends.
What was it that I brought up?
What's iRacing doing?
Oh yeah. So iRacing has scanned the streets around. You're gonna have to remind me of the
Grant
name of the
Park.
park.
Grant Park.
Grant Park?
Yep.
Yeah, the streets around Grant Park in Chicago. And it's hard to believe that anybody that is listening to this podcast hasn't heard of this by now, but that's what they did. And so they're in the process of getting that scan into a state where they can sell it to the users, and that the, I guess, the NASCAR official series that they like their esports series can compete on. So we're going to be getting another sort of semi-fictional street circuit, or a semi-fictional track, sort of like how the Dallara IR01 is a semi-fictional car. Now we have a semi-fictional track to race it on.
So it's a 2.2 mile street circuit that incorporates Lakeshore Drive and Columbus Drive, for those who are familiar. Now, for those who are not familiar, also, my day job, I'm actually a traffic reporter in Chicago, and the rumor was that they shut down the streets on a early Sunday morning in October, which also incorporates part of my shift. So it's kind of strange that I didn't know about this. This is, the first time I heard about this is when they released it.
I snuck this one by
They
you.
that's one of the few things the city of Chicago snuck by me. I may have to have a talk with Mayor Lightfoot later on. But it begs the question, if since NASCAR put all this money to have that scanned, if we're going to see a street race on the streets of Chicago next year, and will we see the NTT IndyCar Series join them? Now, I will preface this by saying next week we'll have a deeper discussion on the history of street races and Chicago. There have been several proposals. WGN 720 Radio's Daniel will be joining us, and he'll get the, and we'll be talking about that. It's a subject I really love because, believe it or not, the first auto race was on the shores of Lake Michigan back in the 1800s. So,
You know, that kind of sounds a lot like the people that say, "Oh, the first pizza was made in New York." No, the first pizza was made in Naples. No, the first pizza was made in Connecticut.
well, you'll have to find out more about that next week.
I bet if we it wouldn't take long to find like 10 different places that are gonna lay claim to the first ever automobile race.
So, I will say this though before we get into it, and I'll say it again next week. The track, because of the way it was designed, needs to go counterclockwise for safety reasons.
So what are the safety reasons?
So you have the map up, right?
Well, I'm looking, yes, but I'm also looking at the Google Earth
Okay.
image.
So let me see if I can get pull the image up real quick. Okay. So the runoff, both at turns one and turn six, there's no runoff. And if you're going to have stock cars, they're going to be coming at it at full bore, okay? Or you're going to have to put a chicane in there, either or. Frankly, they create some great passing zones. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to run counter because, right there at turn two, you'd have plenty of runoff to go to Lakeshore Drive. You wouldn't need it going onto that final corner if you're running counterclockwise. You need it going into what would be clockwise turn 12. Wouldn't need it in turn 11. Yeah, I wouldn't say you need it in seven, but you would definitely need it in five.
Wait, I think that it actually, say, with runoff in mind, I think going the other way actually makes more sense.
Okay, so you're saying the way that they have it right now.
Well, they have it going counterclockwise. No, it's going clockwise.
Yeah, they have it
Oh,
going
no,
clockwise.
you say going counterclockwise is
I
better.
want them to go the other direction.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah,
Sorry, I
so
got things mixed up.
no, that's fine. That's fine. No, because I mean, here's the and if you think Sebring's bumpy, if you haven't seen the video yet, we'll post it on our Twitter page. But yeah, this I know for a fact Sebring does not hold a candle to how bumpy that is.
Well, I think you know what I think could hold a candle to how bumpy it is was Houston in 2006.
I
remember watching the Penske Porsches get like 2 feet of air off those bumps.
Well, didn't you race there too?
Yes, I did.
How bumpy was it? Really that bumpy too?
Yes, it was. And that was after like 3 nights of constant grinding down.
We ought to pick.
It was insanely bumpy.
You know what? One of these days, we need to sit down with Tony Kottman and hear horror stories about that, because if I remember correctly, he designed Houston. He designed Baltimore. Oh, that'd be so fun to talk to him about. Mm-hmm. By the way, and I know I just told you this, and something I'll bring up with Dane Neal. Do you know that there was a street course? You do know this, but do you know there was a street course designed in the northern suburbs of Chicago by a Chicago native IndyCar driver?
I think I do know that just because you mentioned it earlier.
So we will talk more about that next week. I'm really excited because I actually get to geek out with someone who's local and all that fun stuff. But this iRacing Chicago course is really starting to get some play here in the Chicago media. So it'll be interesting to see. I've got some, obviously, connection in the Chicago media. So I'm going to pay close attention to this and see what happens. Obviously, the 2022 schedule has not been released, but we have heard from NASCAR that they do want to shake things up. And like I said, I'm thinking they're missing the Chicago market period, because it's the second year in a row that they're not going to be racing at Chicagoland Speedway. So maybe instead of you know, reprofiling it like they should in the first place, maybe they're just going to just put a street course up. So.
Well, it's something that I was thinking that I guess is somewhat unrelated to what you just said, but I was thinking about how interesting this is from iRacing's perspective, and that it seems like with a lot of the things that they're doing with NASCAR, it almost seems like they're kind of expanding their reach beyond just sim racing. And they're kind of like, they're kind of using their software and their programs to help sanctioning bodies sort of test their ideas. So like, you know, all this stuff with this street circuit is a perfect example. Also the way that we've been hearing about how iRacing and NASCAR have been testing the proposed tweaks to the AAA Speedway in California.
Yep.
So it's, you know, I mean, I'm kind of imagining that, you know, if I'm one of these architectural companies that designs racetracks, you know, why wouldn't I go to iRacing and say, hey, can you build this in the sim? We want to see how it drives.
You know, I will say this. As somebody who I've designed a course similar to this, you know, as a fantasy. I never thought. Here's the thing. You shut down Lakeshore Drive and it's going to be mass pandemonium. I still think that this is not a good idea to use Lakeshore Drive, but I know why they're doing it. And if, you know, NASCAR can write a big enough check, Chicago's going to do it. If they do it, I hope to God they incorporate this 3-4-5 section. I love that. That is a signature feature of this racetrack.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of it is all just 90-degree corners.
Yeah, that's all 90-degree. But you know what? The 8, 9, 10 complex is really cool as well, because it's a right, left, right long sweeper with some elevation change.
It kind of is somewhat reminiscent of the Variante Ascari at Monza.
Yeah.
It's a lot bigger, of course, but it sort of follows the same general trend.
Well, next time you come to town, we're going to take a lap of this if they don't go through with it, because it's there's a lot of neat elevation changes, and it almost is reminiscent of Long Beach in the 70s when F1 was there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's you know, it would be the third IndyCar race on the calendar that is on the Great Lakes.
Okay, so you got Road America, you've got
I mean, like, literally on it. You've got Toronto, Detroit, and Chicago.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, too.
Yep.
That's a very good point. I like that. Yeah, well, yeah. I think about that for a second. I'm like, wait a second. Yeah. Well, no, isn't... Would we count Detroit on a lake? Because I thought that was on a river. Hold on.
Well, it's on a river between the lakes.
Okay. Fair enough. So if we're going to...
It's great. Yeah, it's basically on the lakes. Close enough.
Yeah, it's on the Detroit River. Okay. We'll just, you know... We won't split hairs and we'll say, yes, it's on the Great Lakes, yeah. Because you got Lake Ontario for Toronto. Yeah.
And if we went back to Cleveland like we should, that would be...
That'd be four. Oh, I agree. Yes, Roger Penske, if you're listening, please, let's go back to Cleveland. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Spencer Bucknum is a third-generation racer, and he comes as a champion from a different series. We'll talk about that next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, we think about the legendary names in racing family, especially in open wheel. You have the Andretti's, the Unsers, but you also have the Bucknums. And one of the Bucknums is joining the national F4 ranks after winning the 2020 F4 West Championship. Spencer Bucknum makes his first start in Kiwi Motorsport this weekend at Road Atlanta, and he joins us on Inside Open Wheel. So I've got to say, welcome to big time national racing. It's great to see a third generation racer make his start to make his name in open wheel racing.
Yeah. Thank you. First off, thanks for having me on the show. Getting ready for Road Atlanta this coming weekend. You know, just really looking forward to joining the national series. Stepping up from the West Coast. Had a great year last year, and hoping to keep that success going into 2021.
We'll talk more about getting ready for Road Atlanta here in a bit, but I want to start off. Obviously, you have a very famous last name. Your grandfather and your dad both raced in the Indianapolis 500, USAC, IndyCar. So you're a member of a historic racing family. What is that like growing up and then trying to live up to that famous last name?
Yeah, well, definitely it's an honor, first of all. I mean, to be a third-generation driver is very cool. Got some big shoes to fill. But growing up, you know, you just hear about all the stories of my grandfather racing back in the 60s, you know, back when racing truly was pretty dangerous. So very cool history there. Learned a lot from my grandma, because unfortunately my grandfather passed away, so only can hear about the stories of him. But just growing up with my dad, I was very young when he was racing, but I was able to watch him on TV, and you know, just that's how the passion started, just watching my dad and learn about my grandfather. And I knew that's what I wanted to do from a very young age. So having that, you know, jump start from a young age is definitely something that helped get the passion started. But, you know, racing is just something I think every young boy at some point of his life wants to be a part of, you know. So I was just fortunate enough to be able to follow my grandfather and father's footsteps and be a third generation.
I was going to say, and how's that been? You know, you have that last name, so that's got to help you out with, you know, rides, and people give you a second look because it's like, okay, well, he's got the pedigree, so he probably has the hot right foot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you definitely get the recognition. Just being a Bucknum, my grandfather was very successful back in the day, and my father also very quick in the car, so. Yeah, I mean, I got some eyes looking at me, and I feel like I have some big shoes to fill. And there's obviously a little bit of pressure, but, you know, I'm hoping just the work pays off. Just having my dad as a coach was very helpful, because he went through it. He had a very successful 30-year career, and he knows what he's doing. So, I got some good backing in that sense, and then now just have to prove myself now going into this year. So I'm looking forward to it.
Now, I've followed the start of your career through your dad on social media, but you've taken what some drivers are taking now, and that's kind of like the country club development route. How has that helped you progress into a formula car?
Yeah, so I got my start driving at Spring Mountain Motorsports Ranch back in 2014, started in Mazda Miatas. And just really learned how to, you know, drive a car on the racetrack, learning how to drive a car to the limit before I did any sort of formula car racing. So that was a huge, huge help there. And then hopped in a Radical SR3, which is my introduction into downforce cars. And just before I did any sort of racing, just hone my skills on the racetrack in different types of cars. So I think applied very well into Formula 4 and open wheel in general, because you got the best of both worlds there. You got the momentum cars and the mechanical grip cars, that, like in a Mazda Miata, and then hopping in a downforce car as well. You learn to trust the downforce and carry that speed through the corner. So it was a very easy transition to go back into a Formula 4 and adapt to it fairly quickly.
I was going to say, you talk about that spec Miata, and that's one thing that is really sticks out, that almost everyone who has raced one, when they come up to the professional level, say, that's what you need to get into, because you do learn that momentum in the car. And for you to jump into a radical, that's another smart move, because, yeah, you not only have the momentum, but you also learn your downforce, which is huge for F4.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, just getting that seat time in a spec Miata, you really have to learn how to get off the brakes and, as we're saying, carry that momentum through the corner. And F4 is the entry-level type Formula car racing, so you don't have a lot of horsepower there to help pull you out of the corner. So to learn that technique of how to release the brakes and just trust that the car is going to stick and carry that speed through the corner to get that momentum, and then also, yeah, the aerodynamics helping you out too to suck you to the ground. And obviously, the faster you go, the more that aerodynamics is going to help you out. So it's a trade-off there, and definitely good technique to know how to use. So hopefully Road Atlanta, a very high speed track, it's gonna help out and apply there.
Spencer Bucknum, the latest rookie to sign up for the F4 National Championship, is joining us on Inside Open Wheel. And when did you decide to talk to your dad about moving over from Radicals into the F4 Championship on the West Coast?
Very, very early, actually. But wasn't able to make it happen until last year. So I'd say 2017 into 2018 is when we were first looking at it, but never really had the budget to put it together. So then just did what I could to keep honing my skills in the radical until we could finally find the backing to pull off a full season. So last year was our first year that we were able to make that happen. And just watching the West Coast F4 Championship, you know, they do a very good job of putting together a great program for young racers, learning how to, you know, do a race week, and everything from qualifying and taking a start and having that good competition. You know, on the West Coast, they do have a lot of very talented drivers coming up through the karting ranks and then making their debut in the Formula 4. So a lot of talent there on the West Coast, and it's something that we want to be a part of.
Now, a lot of our listeners are not familiar with the F4 West Coast, and I'll admit I probably should cover it more, but talk to us a little bit about the F4 Championship out west. You know, what tracks do they go to? Is the format similar to what you're going to see this year?
Yeah, so they try to follow the format that the National F4 Series F4 US Championship does. It's put on through Exclusive Motor Works, and they're based out of Sonoma Raceway, so that's one of the tracks that we raced at last year. Went to Thunder Hill, Laguna, and those were the three tracks we raced last year, just because of the struggles with COVID, couldn't get to where we were gonna go originally, which was Portland, Auto Club Speedway, Button Willow. So we do have great tracks here on the West Coast, but went to, yeah, those three tracks. And you know, they say, I've heard people say that if you can learn to drive Thunder Hill, Sonoma Raceway, and Laguna Seca well, you can drive pretty much any track in the world, because those are very technical tracks. Sonoma Raceway especially is a very tough track to learn. So as far as the West Coast F4 Championship, you don't hear too much about it, but as far as budget wise, it's a little cheaper than F4 US, so there are some F4 drivers who make their start there and then try to transition their way into the F4 US Championship, as I'm trying to do. So they have a great program, and it was great to be a part of.
Well, and the travel too, it's not, you know, you're not going too far east over the Rockies. You're staying basically along the coast, so that's got to make budget a lot cheaper as well.
For sure. And that's something that helped us out. Being based out of California, we had access to all those tracks, so it was easy in that sense to budget-wise. We didn't have to spend too much there.
Now, what's a normal field size for the F4 West Coast?
So you're not looking at field as the F4 U.S. Championship usually sees, but last year we were able to get an average of 7 to 8 cars. With COVID, it was a bit smaller, so it was a little tougher to fill the field. But average 7-8 cars and very quick drivers, a lot of competition there as well. And you're running with what's called the Formula Car Challenge. So not only were there F4 cars in that race, but you had older Formula Mazdas, the newer Pro Mazdas, some F3 cars. So you're racing in the same race, and you have to learn to deal with traffic there too. So even though we do split starts, and we'd usually catch some of the slower older Formula Mazdas, some of the slower ones. So in a straight line, they'd be able to pull away from us. But we'd have to learn to set up those passes just to deal with that traffic as well. Was a good learning experience.
As I say, yeah, that even though, you know, you don't see many Formula Car races with varying degrees of traffic, it's still helpful, especially for learning when you are leading a race and you come up on a lap car, you know how to handle it because, as you know, it can be unpredictable.
For sure, and it made races interesting last year. As I was leading a few of the races, you'd have a good gap, but if you're stuck behind one of those Formula Mazdas for a couple laps, it would definitely allow the driver in second to close up a bit. So how to deal with that traffic and how to get past cleanly. Because those Formula Mazdas, they were in their race themselves, so they're not just going to let you by. So you got to learn how to set up that pass and make it clean because they're not going to give it to you. So how to deal with that traffic, how to make it clean so you're not giving up that position in first place, and then get back in your rhythm. Once you're clear of traffic, get back in your rhythm and click off those consistent laps. So it's a good, like we're saying, good learning experience to set up passes and then deal with traffic.
You've got some good teammates this year in the National F4 Championship. Have you been able to talk to any of them and kind of feel out how their personalities are?
So I know one, Cooper Becklin, from last year. We raced against each other on the West Coast here. The others I haven't met yet, which I'm really looking forward to working with them and meeting them. Last year we were a single car team, so I didn't have the benefit of having teammates. That's one thing I'm looking forward to going into the F4 US Championship with Kiwi Motorsports is the multiple drivers on the team bouncing stuff off each other, looking at data. And then obviously we're at the end of the day, we're a competition. So we're going to be trying to outperform each other on the track, but hopefully come back and have some laughs and enjoy the time on the racetrack together.
And how many of the tracks along the schedule have you been to behind the wheel in real life? I imagine you've probably done a lot of them on sim racing.
Yeah, none of them, actually. Oh. Never done anything on the East Coast. So this year's going to be a complete new learning experience for me because, yeah, obviously done them on the sim, but never done them in real life. So definitely something I'm looking forward to. They're great tracks. They're bucket list tracks for sure. Oh. And itching to get to them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They are definitely bucket list tracks for really anyone. So what are your expectations then going into the season, knowing that you're going to these tracks with a clean slate?
It's going to be tricky. I don't have huge expectations. I'm just going to go take it one weekend at a time and just do my best. Fortunately, I do have the simulator that I can hop on as much as I can to learn at least where the track goes, get the feel and flow of the track. But just going to take it one weekend at a time and learn the track and not try to put too much pressure on myself. Just do what I know how to do and try to get familiar with the tracks nice and early. Fortunately, I do have that time in the F4 car. So just from what I've heard, just talking to anyone, any experienced racing driver and team owners, if you know the car, learning the track becomes much easier. But even if you know a track very well, it's harder to learn a car at a track you know than learn a track in a car you know. So I think I have that benefit of knowing the F4 car pretty well, and I think learning new tracks will come a little easier in that sense.
And your dad, I would assume, is still going to run the Pro-Am Trans-Am Challenge, so that's going to be a good help in some weekends as well.
My dad, he actually retired from racing.
Done. He's done for good. Okay. All right.
He's done for good.
Oh, can't say I blame him.
Which is good. Yeah. He retired back in 2012, okay. And now he's happily retired. As if you'd ask him, he'd say he's happy with the career he had, but he's happy to hang his helmet up and now help me forward in my career.
Some pro race drivers who say that, and of course it also doesn't hurt helping you out as well. Well, Spencer, thanks for joining us on Inside Open. I know you got to get ready to fly out to Atlanta. Where can fans follow your progress this year?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at spencer.bucknum, and my Facebook page is Spencer Bucknum Racing.
Fantastic. Spencer Bucknum, good luck this season, and we'll chat with you down the line.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Coming up next, we continue with our F4 FR Americas season preview next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Don't forget, you listen to past episodes on your favorite podcast service. Don't forget to click subscribe to make sure you get all the good episodes, and click that bell button to get notified when we drop new episodes. Charlie Ante joins us for the F4FR season preview. We're going to go into the FR Americas here shortly. I want to touch on the entry list so far for F4. 29 cars have been entered, so a huge field for F4. Has a lot of good drivers who are going to be in the field. We'll talk more about that with Jonathan Green here in just a little bit. But Nico Christodoulou coming back for another season with VRD. Spencer Bucknam, as we said, he's going to be a rookie with, it looks like, Crosslink Kiwi, and those two have combined once again. Matt Clark, the rookie from Canada, last year's Canadian F1600 champion. He's with Godella Racing. Ryan Sheehan's also with Crosslink Kiwi. Three females in the field as well. You've got Chloe Chambers, Juju Noda, also Emily Linscott. Now, she's not set for a full season yet, but she does have a GoFundMe page that is trying to get her throughout the season. I think last I heard, she had about the first three rounds set. So help her get on her way. She did pretty well, I should say, in the Lucas Oil School, Racing School. Jason Alder running for VRD. Let's see here. Who else is of note? Don't forget, you got the two iCar Canada Racing cars with Lucas St. Jean in the 98 and Justin Arsenault in the 36. All right, Charlie, now on to FR Americas. Smaller field than we saw last year. That's because, obviously, we do have Indy Lights. But nonetheless, it's still heavy on talent. Jay Howard, which I'm kind of surprised he only has one car. But nonetheless, he still has Christian Bogle. Now, what's interesting about Bogle, we do have a couple drivers who are going to be doing both FR Americas and Indy Pro 2000. Bogle's going to be doing FR Americas and Indy Lights this year. You talk about a huge jump.
I think who was it we were talking to about the differences between those two cars?
The one I can think of was it Hunter? I think it was Hunter Yaney, because I know he's one of the ones I've talked to about that. And the one thing that really stuck out to me with Hunter is he said that the FR car is a heavier car, but it's got more horsepower, whereas the Indy Pro 2000 is lighter, but you could use the downforce a little bit better.
You mean the Indy Lights car?
No. The Indy Pro 2000 car. I think the Indy Lights car and the FR car are about the same. No, let me take a look. Indy Lights power. Okay. So it's a 450 horsepower car. So the Indy Lights car does have more horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
So
how much does the Indy Lights car have?
Indy Lights has 450.
Okay.
And if we go to FR Americas, it is 303 horsepower turbocharge engine. F4 also runs 160 bhp engine. Both series cars are powered by equally strong, reliable HPD modified versions of the current Honda Civic Type R. So you can get the same kind of engine in a Honda Civic. You just can't get the racing parts because they're obviously built to withstand the higher RPMs that these cars need to run to be efficient. Also, Joshua Carr comes back for another season with Crosslink Competition. He'll be teamed with Dylan Tavella. Hunter Yaney moves up with VRD. He'll be teamed with Eric Evans. Kiffin Simpson is going to be the other driver who's going to be bouncing back and forth between FR Americas and Indy Pro 2000. Kiffin's going to be running with Juncos Racing and Indy Pro 2000. Four-car TJ Speed Motorsports program was announced earlier this week. Baptiste Berthelot is going to be joining that team. He was supposed to be actually in the fourth car at the VIR tests, and I did talk to Tim Neff, and he did confirm to me before the press release came out that that was going to happen. Ian Rodriguez and Jordan Missig will be paired up at Newman Wox Racing, and this year, because coaching change, we'll see Tom Dyer actually helping out with the Newman Wox Racing team. Ernie Francis Jr. going to be running his inaugural open wheel season with Future Star Racing. So nice little mix of competition this year. I think I heard Francis is only going to run the races that coincide with Trans Am, so I don't think it's going to be a full season for the rookie out of Florida. And I've got to say this, kid's going to be quick. He's got the, he has a mentorship of none other than Willie T. Ribbs. And I did talk to Willie T. and nothing but complimentary things to say about Ernie Francis Jr. He was actually supposed to be one of our guests this week, but we just could not find a time to talk to him. So, when we get on, we've got a little surprise for him as well. So,
what's his background going into this season?
He is a 7-time Trans Am champion.
Oh, wow.
I remember when I got started in racing, I think he was 16 at the time, and his dad put him in Spec Miata. And he's worked his way up from TH from that to, he did some World Challenge stuff. Get the full complex on him. But kid's fast. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more about him with Jonathan Green here in just a little bit. So here's all he's done. Okay. Wikipedia says he's a 5-time Trans Am champion, but they did not. I don't think they've got his 2 there. Let's see. Racing results is usually better anyway. Let's see here. Yeah, he's 7-time Trans Am champion, and that includes TA1 and TA2. He has raced in the, well, it was the NASCAR Can-Am Pro Series East. Now it's the ARCA Menards Series East. He's done some NASCAR Xfinity road races. Let's see here. What else? He's the 2019 GT1 runoffs champion. But yeah, I mean, the kid's a hot shoe.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm sure he'll adapt pretty quickly.
Oh, and he's also running the SRX championship, that six race championship that's going to be running in the summer. I'm excited about that. That series is going to be awesome.
Is that the Tony Stewart series?
That's the Tony Stewart series.
Ah.
It's going to be interesting, too, to see how Mark Webber adapts to ovals.
And to big, heavy stock cars.
Yes. Oh, I'm excited about that. So yeah, that's a look at the FR Americas Championship. Now, they're going to be mixed in with SVRA this season. See if I can pull the schedule up here real quick. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year. I've talked to a couple drivers. Today's test session was just plagued with red flags for both FR and F4 for the 2 sessions they had. And it's going to be wet there in Road Atlanta. It's,
oh, boy.
Yeah. I mean, that track is tough under normal circumstances. But under wet circumstances, it's going to be very tough, especially because this is the first time in a couple of years that the competitors in F4 and FR Americas have had a chance to run at Road Atlanta. And if you're listening to this, here's basically the schedule. So Practice for FR Americas kicks off 9 a.m. Eastern on Friday. 10:45 is F4 practice. Then they go right into qualifying with FR Americas at 2:05, 3:50 for F4. That's all Eastern time. It's a triple header weekend for the two series. FR Americas gets their first race off at 8:50 Eastern, followed by F4 at 10:35. FR Americas back on track at 1:25 with F4 back on track at 3:25. And then Sunday, everybody has their feature race. But everybody's running. Here's what's interesting this year. Is F4 and FR Americas, they're running, let's see here if we have a schedule on the race. We don't have race length. I think I heard it was 35 minutes. Huh, okay. Anyway, Sunday, 1:30 Eastern for F4. FR Americas ends their weekend at 3:10 Easter. So coming up next, we're going to talk to the voice, the man you'll be hearing on the air for the first time this season on F4 and FR Americas. It's Jonathan Green next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's not very often that I get to talk to somebody who's on the same kind of plane that I am when it comes to commentators, but it's always great to have one of my fellow commentators on, and this one's going to be broadcasting his first F4 FRA race this season, along with SVRA, Trans Am, and almost anything to do with SVRA, basically. It's Jonathan Green, and you may have heard of him as well if you listen to other podcasts, specifically the Speed City Broadcasting. And yes, I'm diving into other people's podcasts. It's nice to have cross-promotion, though. Jonathan Green joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're getting ready to go to Atlanta and call some racing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We've done one round at Sebring, but this weekend we add the FR Americas and, of course, F4 Americas. And so I'm really excited because the junior series of open wheels is something that's been, you know, close to my heart for a long time.
Well, let's talk about you real quick before we get into F4 and FR Americas. Went into a little bit of, you know, who you are. And it's interesting to see that you've done it all as well. You know, you've called motorcycles. You've called four wheels. You've been on national TV overseas. So you're not new to this realm, I should say.
No, and here's the irony. I went to college here in Texas, which is where I am now. I'm in Austin, but I went to SMU in Dallas, and I studied broadcast journalism. So they keep asking me to come back and say, oh, you're the guy that actually did it. So, I started here in America, but then went back to the UK for a while to start off, and I started off as a reporter on sport, on news, but then onto sport immediately, and I just fell into motorsport. But it was something that I've been around most of my life. I have my godfather is a guy called Brian Redman, who was very big here in the States, a former 5000 champion three times over, and did a few Formula One races. So growing up, my dad followed his career, and therefore I did by proxy. So that was how I got into motorsport. But the following of the juniors was really when I went to Asia. I went to Star TV in Asia. And, of course, we were based in Hong Kong, and there was no Formula One drivers. So we had the rights to Formula One, so we would air that. But then we started doing, you know, what I would call the junior series, the Formula series in Asia. And I was always looking for some kid to come up, and we were very lucky to find Mr. Alex Jung and Mr. Karun Chandok, who both made it to Formula One. And so those were kind of like, not prodigies, but I led the stories of following their careers when nobody'd ever heard of them. And it was great. So I've kind of done that ever since, in terms of my interest anyway.
And of course, that led you to, you know, do Formula One races. You're also, or at least one point, the voice of Macau Grand Prix, which is a very prestigious race overseas. I wish they'd have more coverage over here because I love watching that on TV.
Yes. In fact, that was a legacy, if you will, of being at Star TV because we were in Hong Kong. And so Macau was next door. So from 1991 to 96, I covered it with Star TV and we did live coverage with Murray Walker, sadly passed away recently, as the commentator. And when Murray went full-time F1, I took over, and I've been doing it ever since. which is great. And I didn't go because of COVID this year, but that is a regular November spot for me. And what I love about it is because it's a combination of all the F3 championships around the world, including Japan, and to a certain extent, less so, but will now start to include America, I'm sure. It's really, you know, I just mentioned it, a lot of people don't get to know these names until they become, you know, an Indy driver or an F1 driver, and everybody's like, who's this guy? And it's like, what I get the privilege of is meeting Max Verstappen when he was 15 at the Macau Grand Prix and nobody knew who he was, or Mick Schumacher, or Lando Norris. You know, it's great because, you know, everybody's sort of talking about them in the lower ranks, and then you see the ultimate track, which is a street circuit with no margin for error, against all their peers from around the world, and no one really knows, because they've been in the national championship, how good they are or not. And so we throw them all together over 4 days, and we see what comes out on top. So it's really good fun.
And that's one thing I talked about with Juan Correa a couple of weeks ago, is how it's amazing how when you're here in the States, you don't hear about the Americans in Europe, and you know, vice versa. When you're in Europe, what's open wheel racing over there besides just IndyCar?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and you're right. My worry is, I've used this parallel before. The Japanese don't travel well, and the Americans, because of the lifestyle here, also don't travel that well in Europe. And so sometimes, like in the case of Logan Sargeant, they get all the way up there, and then they come back, you know. But, you know, Jack Crawford's out there, Cameron Das is out there. There's a few flying the flag. And of course, Juan Manuel Correa is going back to F3, which I'm kind of excited by him. He's a good guy, and he did our Trans Am East Championship as well, despite his injury. So he's a top man. And so yeah, but you're right. They don't get the coverage they deserve when they go overseas, and I'm trying, and I'm sure you are, yep, too, to change that a little bit and make sure people are aware.
Yeah, we're definitely trying to do what we can here, and we'll have more throughout the F3 championship. All right, now let's talk about F4 and FR Americas. This is your first season calling the championship after Pirelli Motor Group took over the rights to it. By the way, Tony Pirelli joins us next week on Inside Open Wheel. We'll interview him the day after all the events from Road Atlanta. But back to what we were talking about. This is your first season with F4 and FR. How much have you kind of dove in and kind of immerse yourself in learning the championship?
Well, you know, I actually have a funny story. It's my first full season, right, but I've been around it for the last 4 years. Last 3 years. And what I mean by that is, I've covered for John Pippin when he wasn't, when he had a commitment in Ohio.
Right.
So I've worked for SCCA and for Sydney before now, but only on an ad hoc basis. But I also, the funny story is, John Pippin came to COTA a few years ago and was unwell for that weekend, had to be hospitalized over the weekend. And so suddenly out of nowhere, they said, can you do the commentary? And can you do the prize giving? So talk about deep end.
Yep.
I actually did the end of season prize giving for F3, F4 on their second year, and did the commentary at COTA. So I feel like I was thrown in the deep end, but I swam and I had fun with it and got to know the likes of Josh Carr and many others. And so I've had a lot of fun with it.
And it's exciting because a lot of names coming up through F4, FRA, even though Linus Lundqvist is gone, it's still going to be interesting because you've got Hunter Yaney, still got a lot of fast drivers coming up who were rookies last year and some rookies this year who may actually challenge for the win.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a really interesting combination. I mean, you know, hats off to Linus, and look where he is. He's in Indy Lights this year. I mean, you know, both he, Bjarne Pedersen, and we've been kind of spoiled by some really, really talented drivers. Kyle Kirkwood swept the board. Yep. Dakota Dickerson followed suit. And so that FR championship has kind of been dominated by one driver each and every year. I don't think that's going to be the case. Mm-hmm. You'd have to say on paper that Hunter Yaney is probably one of the favorites, if not the favorite. But when you put him head to head with Josh Carr, who's now going back for a second year of it and is clearly got his, you know, got his ducks in a row, I really think those two stand out to me. But as you said, there's a lot of other guys who may have done a couple of FR races or are coming at it as a complete novice, but could be fast straight away. So I think it's going to be a much more interesting season, and probably the biggest season in the history so far of this young FR series. So I'm particularly looking forward to this. Yeah,
that's Jonathan Green. He will be calling this year's FR Americas races. I'm Jeremy Scott. This is Inside Open Wheel. And not to mention, too, you have a new entrant in TJ Speed Motorsports. Granted, Tim Neff is not new to racing all, you know, in general, but he now has assembled a four-car team. And I talked to him the other day. Here's his driver coaches, which I find are interesting. You've got Victor Franzoni, who was consistently on the podium last year. You've got Roberto Moreno, which, you know... There's no surprise there. And there's a third one while you're talking. I'll dig that one up. Name escapes me on who that third one is.
Well, I'm not sure either. But I know that, you know, you've also got Jay Howard, who runs his own team, but also a handy IndyCar driver. But you're right. I saw Roberto here at COTA just a few months ago. And, you know, talking to Macau, he's a former winner.
Yeah.
He's great guy. And always looking for the next Brazilian talent, especially. But what a great guy to have in your corner. And so many, I love the fact that these drivers give back and are willing to be mentors and coaches. And I think it really helps these youngsters. I mean, somebody current, Josh Carr, people don't know this, but Josh Carr, the Australian, as well as winning in F4 and now he's in FR, he is a huge mentor and driver coach in karting. So he helps the F4 guys or the karting guys coming through to be the next F4 guys on the way up. And it's sort of it's almost his second job, really. So, you know, I love it when drivers get involved. And if I were a driver, that's what I would want, is somebody like a Josh Carr saying, yeah, you know, listen to the engineer, but I've been watching you at turn three and try this, you know.
By the way, that third coach is none other than Linus Lundqvist. Speaking of F4, Tim Neff knows what he's doing, but he's got some guys who are going to be coaching some pretty fast drivers. Anyway, real quick, also in F4, looking at some of the notes that I have, it's going to be very tight this year. Jay Howard comes back. He's got Christensen, Foley, Juju Noda, who, by the way, she was quickest in day two of testing at VIR. Dan Mitchell's VRD has Jason Alder, Nico Christodoulou, Nick Persing coming back. Crosslink, Yardley, Anderson. The list just goes on and on. What I'm excited about, though, is Future Star Racing with Chloe Chambers and iCar Canada Racing Team, Justin Arsenault and Luca Saint-Jean. Those new team, but they were pretty quick as well in VIR testing.
Yeah, and I was watching Christodoulou's results at the Yak Academy, or Yak Academy or whatever, however you put it. But he was right up there, and seemingly of those six races, he was either in the top five or in the top three each time. You're right, the F4 thing could be wide open. Really looking forward to it. There's so many. What I love is the diversity program that's been started effectively in FR and F4. You know, you've got Emily Linscott coming over from England. I spoke with her. She's been looked after by Pippa Mann and also by Tina Larson, of course, of Crosslink Kiwi. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You mentioned it. Juju Noda. Remember that name, because we've always wanted women to succeed and we've always wanted women in F1. But I mean, I remember when her father drove F1, Hideki Noda, and she carries the same helmet and he's there in her corner. And she really is a prodigy because she's done so much at a young age. And for her to go, I mean, you know, the real test is outside of Japan. And she went to the Danish Championship, won straight away. I'm really, really, I mean, she's up against it, but she's also lived her life for this. And I'm just really looking forward to it. And like I said, my career started in Asia, and we've never had a strong Japanese driver since Sato moved into Formula One. I mean, I know Kobayashi and some others have got there, but Sato was the benchmark and has continued to do that, obviously, in Indy. But to have a female, especially in this now new age of, you know, diversity and trying to encourage more women in the W Series, she's got a really strong future. And it's so, so exciting that she's come to America rather than stay in Japan, because that's very rare for a Japanese driver to clearly an influence from her dad And I'm really, really looking forward to see how she goes.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the Europeans and the Asians, Australians all come over to the United States to start their open wheel career, because you would, you know, even as soon as 5 years ago, you'd think, okay, they'd be in Super Formula, they'd be running, you know, Formula Renault. But now everyone wants to come here to the States, and I think it's because of you win the championship, you move up to the next level.
There's no question. I mean, from talking to Bjarne Pedersen to talking to Dakota, and look at what him and look what they're all doing now. I mean, graduates, like, you know, the key is someone like Kyle Kirkwood, right? You know, I had long chats with Kyle. He has no money, and there's a lot of drivers like that. And, you know, his career could have putted out very, very simply, but he's been picked up now by Honda. And look what Honda are offering for the FR champion, which is a chance to go Super Formula in Japan, which is incredible. You know, that's a $1 million contract. That's up there with an IndyCar drive. And ask Pierre Gasly how it did for him, or Pato O'Ward. You know, these guys, it's one of the top championships. Because it's in Japan, you don't hear a lot about it. But there's been some great stars to come out of it. So the point is, there's two things that the Americans have done right. They've made it the cheapest F4 championship in the world. They've made it the biggest entry field in the world. And the ladder is secure enough that if you can win, you're going to get money to proceed. And that for any racing driver, wherever you're from, and Linus Lundqvist is a great example, has to be, you know, a real encouragement for Europeans, Asians, and from anybody around the world.
And I can't let you go without talking about the 10,000-pound elephant in the room, and that is Ernie Francis Jr. doing the double this year on most events. He'll run the DA1 race and then go run FR Americas. I talked to Willie T. Ribbs, and he said the kid should be in IndyCar. He is that good. You've had a chance to watch Ernie Francis make his way up through, you know, the multiple championships he's won in Trans Am. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that actually, to me, is the biggest story of the year, because you're right, I've watched him for the last few years in Trans Am. He's a good example of a family team, not a lot of money. They scratch together to put Breathless together. And I'm not being rude when I say that, but they really do arrive at the last minute. And, you know, Ernie works on the cars on his own. And now they've expanded to the GT Championship as well. So they're running Porsches as well as Trans Am. And now, of course, he's got this opportunity in single seaters. And I think the truth is, had he been a rich kid from Miami, he would have probably been in single seaters all the way through Europe, because I think he is that good. I really do. But what I love about this opportunity is he's going to put 7 years of winning and maturity of fighting against the likes of Dyson and you name it, and put it into single seaters. So he's going to be older, wiser, more knowledgeable on the track, maybe not in the car. But I think his intelligence as a driver and his racecraft and his dedication will be huge for this. And given that he's got the spotlight on him as a diversity driver too, he speaks well, I think he's going to be a fantastic ambassador. And as you know, he's doing SRX as well. So, I mean, we're going to be seeing a lot of Ernie Francis Jr. And honestly, I don't often shout about it like this, but there isn't a driver, I don't think, in America that deserves this more than he does. He really is a great kid. He works hard, he's friendly, he's popular in the paddock, and I think he's going to succeed and succeed well.
No, I don't disagree. I've watched him come up through SCCA even, and the level of success he has does not surprise me. All right, let's talk about the broadcast. Where can we find not only the F4 FRA content, but really all the races this weekend?
Yep, it's all on the apps. That's what we're doing this year. We're doing a live stream. I'm not 100% sure how they're spreading it out with F3 and F4. I'm more familiar with the Trans Am because this is our first time to work, obviously, with them. But I'll be alongside John Pippen, who has been the longtime commentator for it. And we hope to share the mic. And we've worked together before, so I'm looking forward to that because he's a brilliant knowledge on all things F3, F4. And I also hope to bounce out the booth now and again and get on the grid and get to know some of the personalities and be there at the end of the race to do the driver interviews. So we really, personally, my objective this year is to really get to know these girls and guys as they grow through the season and sort of live and breathe it with them, because it's such an exciting time for them. And what they do in this coming season could make or break their futures. So I'm really excited to actually be, like you say, full time on this now, and with a good team of people as well. So we've got three commentators, myself leading with Trans Am, Ben Sissel leading with the SVRA, with me backing him up, and me and John Pippen doing FR and F4. So really looking forward to it.
Fantastic, Jonathan Green. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you down the road. I think think our fans might enjoy having you on more often.
I'll be there. Tune in.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we wrap up the SimTV 225 at the Chicagoland Speedway next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, we're going to talk about sim racing here to wrap up the show. We'll have the preview for next week's show in just a little bit. Now, before we get to the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series wrap-up, we can't forget what happened in IndyCar. Yes, they are running the IndyCar iRacing Challenge once again. This time it's only a three-race championship. Race one was last week at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve, and the newest Ganassi driver was the one who took the checker flag first. It's Alex Palou, and Charlie, many are saying that he might win a race in real life, and here's the thing. Granted, there's a benchmark of drivers in the 10 car of Tony Kanaan. Tony Kanaan's that benchmark. I think that he can not only beat that benchmark, but I think he'll surpass that benchmark.
Time will tell.
He being Palou. Well, look at how well he did. Look how well he did in Dale Coyne equipment last season. He was running near the front at the Indianapolis 500. He scored that podium at Road America. I think the kid, he's going to be good. I think he's going to do well. Race two was won by Sage Karam, who still deserves a full-time IndyCar ride. Just saying. Go ahead.
No, I was just continue.
I was going to say, the kid deserves a full-time IndyCar ride, nonetheless. What I like is that they're also incorporating road to Indy drivers. So, we saw Nikita Lastashkin in Montreal. He was in the 20. Let's see here. This week was Enzo Fittipaldi in the 52. So, Enzo's going to be running IndyCar. But Braden Neves is in the 17 for the Road to Indy driver. So I like how they're incorporating the Road to Indy drivers with the IndyCar drivers in their seat. And it's just great to see all around that that's taking hold, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I think it's good experience for them, even though it's virtual. Mm-hmm. It's fun for us to watch to kind of see, if they did move up immediately, how could they do?
Oh, and by the way, RC Enerson was running the first two rounds. That's another driver who deserves a full-time seat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the problem with motorsports.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good drivers, and there's only so few seats.
And it's interesting to see Max Chilton run an oval. I'm kidding. If Max Chilton wants to run straight road courses, the guy deserves it. Because
I don't blame them.
He basically single-handedly brought Carlin back here to the States.
Mm-hmm.
So again, next week will be the Sebring round. That was the third round that was supposed to be a fan vote. Although Charlie, like you said, Oxford Plains.
Yeah, that's a huge missed opportunity, I think.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's another oval. It would be a spectacular crash fest. And everybody would have fun.
Yep. Cars would be flying.
What I think they should do is they should, and Formula One should do this as well. I think Formula One would be even greater because it's kind of like they're all very prissy and how they are. But they all need to get together and play some Wreckfest.
We should probably make that the official game of Inside Open Wheel.
Yes, we should.
All right, so on to the bread and butter, the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series. At my home virtual track, the Chicagoland Speedway, you know, I sat there in front of gate three and they wouldn't let me in. They looked at me weird when I said, but there's a race there. Oops. Big story, though, in qualifying, Chris Demerit not making the show, which is very rare. He was the one-time points leader, and of course, with him not scoring any points, it means he falls further in the standings. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. You did qualify for the race, however, Charlie.
I did.
But we'll talk more about that a little bit later on as well.
I'm always a little bit surprised when I set up a time in qualifying and it drops a little bit, but then it kind of just stays there in like 26th place. I'm like, wait, I just assumed that I set a really bad time. So, but no, I was like 26th or 27th.
It's not bad. I mean, you know, pretty respectable.
Yeah. And, I guess I don't know if you want to get to me talking about how my race went before or after the break, but,
We'll get to that. We'll talk about the stats real quick.
I'm sure the listeners care a lot more about how my race went than how the winners went. How the winners did.
150 laps around the 1.5-mile circuit, 17 lead changes, 6 cautions for 25 laps. I want to know why, if it was how it was 73 degrees there when it was really in the 60s during that time, but I don't know how iRacing, you know, figures that out, if there's a certain algorithm.
I think there is like in-game date and time. So I think that it kind of just sort of takes I'm just kind of making this up, but this is how I would do it. Sort of look at the weather statistics for that time of year and then randomly generate something between the extremes.
Okay.
That's what I would do.
There were, as we said, 17 lane changes amongst 10 drivers. Henry Bennett leading from the pole, so obviously he gets the pole for the point, for the extra point for the pole position, extra point for one or more laps. Also leading laps were Adam Blocker, AJ Burton, Ray Kingsbury, Andrew Kinsella, Phil Kraus, Matt Pileski, Tony Schoen, Tanner Watkins, and Andrew Wood. Interesting to note, Andrea Syk not having a good showing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he got caught a lap down with the yellows and pit stops.
Ah, well, that makes sense. He finished, he did finish 27th, about 48 laps in arrears. The big story was Matt Pileski winning the race by 0.001 seconds over Andrew Kinsella. Anna Blocker third, Tony Schoen fourth, and Robert Malseca in fifth place. Carey, Watkins, Branch, Quinn, and Ryerchuk here finished out, round out your top 10. And you have to go all the way back to 31st to get Charlie Ante. Let me sit back a little bit, and then you can give me all the excuses you want about what happened.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You got good. Your beer and you're ready?
I'm good. Go ahead. Come on. Let's hear it.
All right. So the first 10 laps or so actually went really, really well. I worked myself all the way up from, I think, like 26th or 27th up to, like, 15th. So I was on the move. And even then, I was like, oh, there ain't no way I'm going to keep this up the whole race. I think the tires started wearing down, and I lost a few spots. And so at that point, I was like, okay, maybe I overdrove it a little bit. But, you know, it's a long race. Have patience. I was working with the weight jacker, trying to get the car to handle a little better. And I made too aggressive of a change, and I looped it coming out of two. And so I spun onto the grass. I didn't hit anyone. I didn't even bring out a caution. I just gathered it back up, drove back onto the track. And, I was staying a consistent, I was running the same time as the leaders. They gained like maybe half a second over like 10 laps. And then I think I had to pit. So I pit for fuel. That put me 2 laps down, and then a yellow came out. So I got caught 2 laps down. And I thought I was being really clever under the yellow. I was like, okay, we're getting the 2 to go. So I'll come in and pit because I'm at the back of the line. So I might as well just top up fuel. So I did that. I came out And as I came out, there were a whole bunch of lapped cars coming past me. I was like, well, I was at the back of the line, so where did these people come from? And it turns out that if I had stayed out, they would have waved me past the pace car, and I could have gotten at least one of my laps back. So I screwed myself over with that move. And then I was like, okay, well, that kind of sucks, but it's still a long race. There's plenty to go. Maybe I can salvage this. And then I think pretty much the same thing happened again under the next yellow. And then it happened again under the next one, except this time it was trying to, as we were coming to take the green, iRacing was telling me to pass all the cars in front of me because I think it was trying to wave me through. So it was like, say, it was like pass the 51 car, then pass the 72 car, then pass this car and this car and this car. And so I was doing that as we were coming up to the start finish line to take the green. And there's another rule in iRacing that says you cannot pass before start finish line on a restart on the inside. You can pass on the outside, but not on the inside. And I was doing all these passes on the inside. So iRacing got its wires crossed. And so it was telling me to pass all these cars. And then after I crossed start finish line, it gave me a 26-second stop and go penalty. And at that point, I was like, you know what? It's just not my day. And I quit.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's rage quitting in politics talk.
Yeah, I can. I'll join Bubba Wallace over there with the rage quitting in iRace. He did that last year.
Yes, I remember that, and he took so much flack for it because poor Bubba Wallace is. So
including from me. So
yeah. Oh yeah. So now, how do you feel?
I feel okay. Just, you know, sometimes you got to walk a mile in someone else's shoes.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going to tweet him to apologize to him, right?
Well, just, you know, I'm sure a lot of people heard my thoughts and took it to heart. So,
yeah. So, Charlie, I just sent you something over our, show chat. I just found this on, Reddit. Dalton Kellett made his own steering wheel that he ran with at Homestead today. Made it out of cardboard.
I'm tempted to think that that's a joke, but there's a lot of wires there, so it kind of does look like it might be real.
It looks real. And here's the thing. Dalton Kellett has been known to work with stuff like that, so that's not too surprising.
Hmm.
Not as cool as Sebastian Bourdais racing iRacing with a in an IKEA chair because Sebastian Bourdais is a badass.
Well, you know, I mean, if I'm looking at this, it's quite primitive, but that obviously that makes it no less impressive. But it doesn't look like it has any force feedback, and that reminds me to point out that a lot of top oval, like a lot of the top NASCAR iRacers, they actually don't even use force feedback.
Really?
Which to me, it's to me is like absolutely insane because that's the only thing that you are actually getting tactile feedback from the car with is through the steering wheel. And so the fact that they just forego that entirely, I'm like, are you crazy? I don't understand how that works, but apparently they do and they're really, really good.
Huh. That's interesting because you think that would help them out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you, like I said, that's the only part of the car that you can actually feel. So I don't know how, I don't know why, I don't know what things in their brain are firing that make it work, but apparently it does.
Well, they're NASCAR racers, so. Yeah. All right, so nonetheless, it's going to be an interesting weekend of racing at Road Atlanta, Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. Must appease the sponsors. It's going to be wet, so three races for F4 and FR Americas each. Make sure you tune in to the SVRA app. If you don't get a chance to watch it live, it'll be on YouTube later on in the week. Coming up on next week's program, we dive deeper into the prospect of a Chicago street race by going over the history of potential events with 720 WGN Radio's Dane Neal. It's not just a current proposal that's been tried, and there have been several, and not just within the city limits. There are several driver academies in European racing that funnel into Formula One, and there's one American driver who's in the middle of one, Jack Crawford. We sit down with his father, Tim, to get the scoop on how they were courted by several, but end up with their own and get the inside scoop on what they're all about. Also coming off the opening weekend of the 2021 F4 and FR Americas season, we talked to Tony Perella to get his thoughts on the weekend that was at the Atlantis B Tour at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. So for Spencer Buckham, Jonathan Green, our driver analyst Charlie Anthe, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the United States Open Wheel Ladder System. And don't forget about the next Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series round, the Richmond 160 at Richmond Raceway on Sim.TV Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.